Okay, thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I'm a third-year grad student in Rafael Busso's group, and I'm going to be telling you about energy disentanglement, which is the work with a former postdoc, Stefan Leichenauer, and another grad student, Adam Levine, at Berkeley. Okay, so I'm going to spend a few times explaining to you what I mean by energy disentanglement, but let me first motivate that energy and entanglement, more specifically entanglement and entropy, are related through various ways. My favorite way to connect them is through gravity. So let's connect entanglement and gravity. So let's take a relativistic quantum field theory and go to a pure state and consider a particular region and trace out the information outside. You're left with a density matrix. You can compute for Neumann entropy of that density matrix. And that's what I'm going to be calling entanglement entropy. And notably, it has these short distance divergences that the leading part of it goes like the area, and the subleading divergences, and there's a finite piece. And the connection to gravity is through noticing that this area divergence is believed to renormalize the Newton's constant and combine with the gravitational with the Bekenstein-Hawking type gravitational entropy into a quantity that we'll call generalized entropy. It's known as generalized entropy. And this quantity is believed to be some good notion of entropy of space-time in a sense that it satisfies nice properties like the generalized second law. So in that sense, it's an interesting quantum gravity notion of entropy. So that's connection between...
Is
the cutoff of your relativistic QFT. Cut it off to get a finite thing. So the connection between energy and gravity is even more obvious. Einstein field equations, we know local energy has something to do with the curvature of space-time. But one particular relation between energy and entanglement, energy and gravity that I want to emphasize is conditions on the energy sector that result in nice geometries. For example, there's the null energy condition. This is just classical gravity. Classical matter. The null energy condition is the condition that if you take the stress energy tensor at a point and contract it twice with the same null vector, you get something non-negative. That condition is enough to rule out a lot of pathological spacetimes. So the interesting thing about this condition is that even if you take the flat space limit, a limit where gravity drops out, that's still a non-trivial condition on your classical field theory, on the matter theory. So and this brings me to a very interesting connection between energy and entanglement directly, where it involves no gravity, which is through the observation. So this null energy condition is violated quantum mechanically, for example, in the Casimir effect. So in 2015, there was this paper by my advisor and some people where they conjectured a replacement for this zero, a correction to this formula, which is related to, the correction is related to shape deformations of Neumann entropy, where now this inequality will be, satisfied even quantum mechanically. So that's the quantum null energy condition, and is one place where energy and entanglement meet directly in the context of quantum field theory. So let me break down this right-hand side a little bit. Morally, it's just a second derivative of Neumann entropy with respect to shape deformations, but let me be very precise about it. So let's say you have a pure state and you divide the space-time into the left region and right region by a flat, by a entangling surface that's just this line or plane in higher dimensions. So this y direction is my transverse direction where the entangling surface is, and this point P is where I want to find the lower bound on my null energy. Null energy with respect to this k. So this is the entangling surface, and the V and U are the null directions that emanate from it, and K is in, happens to be in the V direction in this case. So how do you compute this shape deformation of Neumann entropy? You deform the surface by going to these wiggly entangling surface, which has its U profile equal to zero, but only wiggles in the V direction. So by moving the surface from this entangling surface to this entangling to this other entangling surface, I'm shrinking, let's say, the right-hand side of my space-time. Therefore, the density matrix associated to that side is changing, and therefore the Neumann entropy will change. So Neumann entropy, it will become, in other words, a function of this profile, which I'm going to label by Vy lambda, where V of y is just a particular V profile of this surface, and lambda is just the parameter that I'm using to, it's like a one parameter family of these surfaces, where lambda equal to zero, I'm sitting right here, and as I increase lambda, I'll move to wiggly cuts at u, at, that are all at u equals zero. So these are cuts of the null planes, which are going to be very important in this talk. They're going to come up often. So how do I compute this right-hand side? I take a functional derivative of Feynman entropy with respect to this V, and then compute a normal partial derivative with respect to lambda of it. So that's morally two derivatives, two shape derivatives of Feynman entropy, and evaluate it at lambda equals zero. And that's my lower bound on Feynman entropy here. Sorry, by my lower bound and the null energy here. So this is expected to be true quantum mechanically even. So this parameter y determines where on this entangling surface I'm bounding null energy. So the reason I wrote this second derivative this way is because I want to break it down for you further. Oh, by the way, this was proven in free theories in 2015. And more recently in quantum field theories with an interacting UV fixed point by Faulkner and collaborators. This null energy quantum null energy condition. Okay, so let me break down this right hand side a little bit. All I'm going to do is basically write this partial lambda derivative as another functional derivative on top of this function. So just do that by the chain rule. I get this, and so in going from partial derivative to another functional derivative, I end up with two functional derivatives at points y and y prime, where I'm going to integrate over the y prime functionality. So this second functional derivative is going to be very interesting for me. It's going to be something I'm going to be computing throughout the talk. And the point of it, the point is that this second functional derivative is expected to have a contact term, a delta function piece. The coefficient of the delta function piece, I'm going to call S double prime. So S double prime is just the coefficient of the delta function piece of this functional derivative with respect to y and y prime. And then everything else I'm going to call off diagonal, the off diagonal second functional derivative of Feynman entropy. Now the reason I broke it down this way is because this off diagonal terms, you can think of as the response of Feynman entropy to deforming at point y and y prime, where y and y prime are separated. This off-diagonal term, because these are, you know, y and y prime are not the same, you can rewrite this second functional derivative as entanglement entropy of these subsystems A, B, and C in this way, and by strong subadditivity of Feynman entropy for these three systems, the off-diagonal parts have a sign of their own. They're non-positive. So in that sense, the off-diagonal parts just like make this inequality be satisfied more. So in some sense, the more non-trivial part of this inequality, the more mysterious part, is the 2 pi TVV being bigger than or equal to S double prime part. Like that's the more maybe interesting part of this inequality. And so now that brings me to energy's entanglement. The point for this talk will be, I'm going to motivate that S double prime is actually equal to 2 pi TVV and in interacting quantum field theories. And
sorry, do you really need any interacting quantum field theory or just interacting quantum field?
I mean in any quantum field theory with an interacting UV fixed point, yes. And actually, in this talk, I'm going to prove this for holographic CFTs, but then I'm going to motivate why it's true more generally. Yes?
I'm just getting confused on the sign. So the right-hand side, you broke up into some of these diagonal terms and off-diagonal terms.
Uh-huh.
The off-diagonal term, you said, is negative. So how come you can just drop it and conclude?
No, I can't. I can't drop it, but I'm just saying that they just help the inequality be satisfied more. Okay, I can explain it to you.
It helps
this. Yeah. Yeah, right. But I can explain to you the intuition behind the delta function piece being related to energy. If my shape deformations, let's say physically what I'm going to do is I'm going to go from a flat entangling surface to a wiggly entangling surface. And if I take the width of this deformation in the null direction to be much smaller than any scale of the state or any scale in my theory, then this shape deformation would basically just pick up the delta function piece and the off diagonals would be dropped out. So in that sense, if you do a localized deformation and take a second derivative with respect to that very localized deformation, S double prime is equal to 2 pi pbb. That's sort of the intuitive statement. Yeah.
So another question. How do I think about returning to the classical null energy condition in the h bar goes to 0 limit?
Well, the point is, so this is interesting. Yeah, so that's one way I was going to say. The one way you can think of it is just literally take the h bar goes to zero limit of that inequality, and then it will go to zero. But I think that's actually kind of an interesting question. It's a little bit non-trivial what happens, and I don't have a great explanation for how that pops out. But the best way to understand that is to take a finite deformation where you don't have the equality. And I think there you get to really have a nice h-bar counting, and then you can set h-bar to zero and then get the null energy condition. Somehow there is a tension between taking this very width very small and taking the h-bar go to zero limit. But
I think there's more ways than that, right? You can take a limit where h-bar goes to zero. You can take a limit where you can consider a thermal state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's not obvious in that sense to set that the right hand side goes to zero. But presumably it's true that in that context, the second derivative of the entropy turns into some kind of semi classical entropy flux across the null surface. I haven't checked the science, but it sounds kind of right, in which case it's probably intrinsically positive and would then imply the usual null energy condition as a result.
Second derivative of the class, is that second derivative of this classical entropy you're saying is positive?
Well, that's my question. If I look at entropy in this context, then presumably the second derivative is something like an entropy flux across a piece of a null surface.
The second derivative is like an entropy flux, like if kind of a first derivative.
That's
the confusion. No, I have not, and that's one of the things that we are actually thinking about. It's a kind of a non-trivial thing at this point for us, like how to exactly think of the null energy condition as emerging from this, or is it something independent? I think probably it pops out of this, but at this point I don't exactly know how. Okay, so, yeah. Yes.
Then it's generally saturated.
For
interacting case.
Yeah. And the point is that for free theories, there is an additional contribution to the delta function that's not just. So, in other words, for free theories, you will have TVV, 2 pi TVV equals S double prime plus another term. Yes. That's what's been done in the proof of the quantum null energy condition in free theories, for example, in the 2015 paper.
What's the form of that term?
It is a closed form, but it's very ugly. It's written in the language of null quantization. So there's an auxiliary system and there's a pencil system, and it's a very convoluted equation, but it has a definite sign. Like you look at it and it's complete square or something.
But not something.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, maybe it's obvious to someone who, like, really knows how to think of it the right way, but not obviously. It wasn't obvious from there. But I should say that, yeah, what happens if you turn on a little bit of interaction is that that thing that used to be another delta function contribution that kept this inequality, this equality from being true, now this delta function smears a little bit, gets smeared a little bit, becomes an off-diagonal term.
So I believe that. Are you saying you can see that explicitly in the calculation, or that's the situation happening?
Well, I think you can see this explicitly, because we're working on a general conformal field theory proof of this, and then you can see it explicitly. And even here, I'm going to try to show you explicitly how this happens when I'm proving it holographically. That's not going to be as explicit. Okay, so this is the main point of this talk. I'm going to be using holography for computing phenomenon entropy here. So I'm going to just be introducing a bunch of useful things that are going to be important for my talk, and show you how this calculation is done, at least the intuition of it, without getting too much into the annoying details. And then I'm going to talk about some consequences and future directions. Okay, so if you take one of these like half spaces and start with the vacuum state and you trace out half of the system, let's say the left half, you have now a density matrix, the vacuum density matrix restricted to a half space, and you can take the minus log of this operator, and this one I'm going to call the vacuum modular Hamiltonian. In general, minus log of any rho is called the modular Hamiltonian. And the expectation value of this operator in any state is given by the boost generator. It's a kind of an interesting thing, where basically the boost generator is going to be basically the integral of TVV with another V on all these null lines, and then integrated in the y direction altogether. So this is the vacuum modular Hamiltonian and quantum field theories. And the interesting observation in 2016 was that actually if you generalize this, you can generalize this vacuum modular Hamiltonian relation to these cuts of null planes, these kind of regions that I'm going to be talking about. And the generalization is done basically by replacing the boost generator by kind of another boost generator where it's null line by null line. You write down the boost charge, and then you integrate them in the y direction separately. So now I have an additional V minus capital V of y, where this is the profile that I've chosen. So this is the generalization of the previous formula to these cuts of null planes. And a simple observation here is that if you take the vacuum modular Hamiltonian, evaluate its expectation value, and take two functional derivatives with respect to y and y prime, you will actually just get a delta function with the coefficient 2 pi TVB. So that's just an observation. It's sort of like what I wanted to claim was that if you put entropy here, you will get that plus some off-diagonal terms. But at the level of vacuum modular Hamiltonian, you have this. Yeah.
Comment, you mentioned the Smith class of gravity at one point. Most of your talk is at least implicitly in flat space. In asking about generalization to curved spaces, there are a lot of reasons maybe a lot of things go through. But if this particular step is critical, if you think your step is critical in the derivation, am I correct that this is something we expect to hold in curved space time on Killing horizons, but perhaps not on more general horizons when you might have expected to apply to Q-network?
Well, if you have some way of defining, like some sort of a global, good notion of vacuum state in curved space, local, like you can, at least if you have some sort of local vacuum, I would expect that if you take the modular Hamiltonian there, like whatever modular Hamiltonian you want to replace by the vacuum modular Hamiltonian in curved space, and you take two local derivatives, its delta function is again going to be 2 pi TVB, even in curved space.
So,
but obviously this equation will not be true.
Okay, I'm not sure what you have in mind. I would have said that you probably don't have a good notion of local vacuum state in the sense in curved space time unless you're on a Killing horizon.
Yeah, it becomes tricky to define the state a little bit there. Yeah, so That is the bigger, that is the challenge, yes. Is there a question? No. But let me see, I feel like there should be a...
Well, you're eventually going to make some state independent. Is that actually...
State.
This particular calculation you're in one state, but you're eventually going to make some state independent argument. You're going to tell us that this inequality is saturated in all states.
Oh, yeah. Not just for the, you know. I mean, this is not even, this is the vacuum module Hamiltonian exertion value in some others, in some general state. So I'm basically, what I'm kind of going to be saying is that if you take the H of some state psi, an expectation value in that state psi, that this second functional derivative will have a delta function that's 2 pi TVB. But anyways, I'm getting there. So another good, interesting entropic quantities in quantum field theory is the relative entropy, which is a measure of distance between, I mean, this is generally true in quantum information, is that a relative entropy is a measure of distinguishability between density matrices rho and psi, and it could be written as the expectation value of the vacuum module. Let's say sigma is the vacuum and rho is some state. Then the relative entropy between rho and sigma could be written as the expectation value of the vacuum module Hamiltonian in the state rho, minus the phenomenon entropy of the state rho. So if I just take this, so this is going to be useful later for me, so I've introduced it, but some observation that's particularly going to be important for me is that if you take the second functional derivative of phenomenon entropy with respect to Vy and Vy prime, that you will get this delta function piece that's in the second functional derivative of the vacuum module Hamiltonian minus the second functional derivative of relative entropy. So the statement that the only delta function piece in this quantity is 2 pi TVV is equivalent to saying that the relative entropy functional derivative will not have a delta function in it. So this is going to be something that's going to come back. I'm going to be using this for one derivation of this saturation. Okay, so phenomenon entropy is difficult to calculate in quantum field theory, so I'm going to be using holography, and I'm going to introduce, so this is the Ryu-Takinagi slide. I'm going to be using the bulk geometry and extremal surfaces, blah, 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 to calculate phenomenon entropy on my QFT side. So any time I refer to gravity is now just indirectly for the purpose of calculating phenomenon entropy. Yes?
That doesn't work for all states.
Hmm? Yeah. So it's for classical, the states that are dual to classical geometries, and I'm going to comment on tiny quantum corrections on top of that. Yeah, it's true. It's for those states, but it is like it's a common tool that people use these kind of states to make statements that then would give them clues as what could generally be true. So I'm going to be making statements that, strictly speaking, applies to only these states. Yeah. But the thing is that So these statements that I'm making are going, we think they're prone, they're not affected by 1 over n corrections or higher derivative gravity corrections. And also another independence motivation for claiming that this is true for more interacting theories is that we are basically almost done proving it directly in interacting conformal field theories. But that's going to be something I'm going to give you two slides at the end, but not going to go too much detail right now. Okay, so I'm going to basically explain to you how this second functional derivative of phenomenon entropy with respect to this position, positions Vy, Vy prime, how that's going to geometrize in this language, and so to tell you how this calculation goes, kind of. Okay, so I have to first make contact with the RT surface somehow and set the language. So let's use the Pfefferman-Graham coordinates. Z is my distance from the boundary. The quantum field theory, or the CFT, lives at the Z equals 0 slice. And the extremal surface the entangling surface I'm going to parameterize by, let's say, x of y, and the Bart quantities are the bulk quantities, how the extremal surface goes into the bulk. So I have some expansion for x bar in small z that goes like this, starts with the entangling surface and then deviates and gets corrections. And in particular, for that the boundary dimension is d-dimensional. The boundary is d-dimensional. I'm going to be particularly interested in the z to the d part of this expansion. I'm going to label it as x d of y. And I also have a similar expansion for the metric, where let's say the boundary is flat. And I'm going to have corrections. The z to the d part of is actually related to the expansion value of the stress tensor on the boundary. Okay, so I have these two z expansions for Van Graham. Okay, so now let's go to these kind of surfaces that are interesting for this talk. These half, these flat cuts or no cuts of null plane. So in the boundary in this picture is two-dimensional, so a flat cut is just like a point, u equals v equals zero, and the RT surface is going to be just like a flat cut in the bulk if the state is the vacuum. Let's say my bulk is in the vacuum, or like the state is vacuum, basically. So now I'm going to deviate. I'm going to go to one of these cuts of null planes on the boundary. What happens is that in the bulk, I'm going to go to a cut of the boundary null plane, Poincaré horizon, where the position of this cut could be written as the position of my boundary cut multiplied by, like, integrated against a propagator. So basically, there's a propagator that propagates the shape of the boundary region into the bulk. This is in pure ADS. In pure ADS, if you restrict to these u equals zero surfaces, the equations for the v equation sort of linearizes like this, and you have this nice expression where this is the propagator. So I can propagate my profiles into the bulk from v to v bar, let's say. V to V bar. Yeah. Questions about this? Okay.
You have a global ADS over there and you have a flat ADS slicing. So are you doing the calculation of global ADS?
No. Let's go to the Poincaré patch. I'm drawing it. I'm drawing the global thing, but imagine that's I0 and I'm considering only the Poincaré patch of this picture. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the way this quantity dsdv, the shape deformation of fundamental entropy, geometrizes, was explained in a paper by Jason Kohler and Stefan Leichenauer in 2015. It's pretty interesting that, so the shape deformation of fundamental entropy respect to, let's say, vy, the functional derivative, is actually related to how the u component of the entangling surface starts to deviate as you go in the bulk. In particular, the z to the d piece of the u-bar coordinates. So in other words, I go to, let's say, some state that's a little bit away from pure ADS. Now, if I move my, now if I draw my entangling surface in the bulk, it's going to come a little bit off of this red Poincaré horizon. And how much it's going to come off of is going to be the u-coordinates and the u sub d part of this, the z to the d part of this u bar expansion is going to be related to how d is going to be equal to dsdv, basically the changes of entropy with respect to v deformation on the boundary. Okay, so then obviously I can now take another shape deformation of this, and now I have this geometric expression, which I'm very interested in, is du d dv quantity. Yeah, have a question? Oh, sorry. Okay, so now from here, it's pretty easy to, at least if your deviation is from, let's say linearized deviation from pure ADS by just turning on some linearized, some matter that backtracks on like linearly in the geometry, I can set up this, the previous equation that I had for how u bar and v bar changed, like they used to be just this equation. Now if I go to a perturbative background, I get some correction here. This equation, in other words, gets sourced. So I have now this sourced equation. I can write it for u and even for delta u bar. And then I can solve it. Then I can write down the explicit form of the source. I can feed it a metric that solves the linear Einstein-Sofield equations with some matter bulk. And this is kind of a tedious calculation, but you can compute this thing and look at the delta function piece and see that it is indeed just TVB on the boundary. So this is how that calculation would go, but let me give you a more illuminating maybe explanation, another derivation of this linearized calculation. And that's going to be where relative entropy comes in, and the relative entropy derivation of this. Is there any question for like how this computation would go in general? Okay, so let's go back to this relation between relative entropy and phenomenon entropy through this second shape deformations. Okay. Now, consider a coherent state in the bulk, which backreacts perturbatively on the geometry. So to leading order in large and large coupling, we have this JLMS result, which is basically saying that the bulk relative entropy equals boundary relative entropy. Well, now I can take this relative entropy of the CFT and I can replace it by the bulk relative entropy. So the bulk relative entropy would basically be the subtraction of the bulk phenomenon entropy from the bulk vacuum modular Hamiltonian. And the bulk vacuum modular Hamiltonian is just the bulk boost generator associated to that to the bulk half space, or the bulk cut of the null plane region. And I can write it down. I can write it down in terms of TVV bulk. And because my state is coherent, I'm restricting to coherence, the S bulk I'm just going to forget for now. So relative entropy on the CFD is equal to this easy boost generator expression in the bulk. Now I can easily take shape deformations with respect to boundary profiles V, two shape deformation of this quantity, and that would give me the second shape deformation of relative entropy on the CFD. Could be written basically as TVV bulk and some expression in terms of propagators and stuff. So this is totally under control. And you look at this expression, and the observation is that, let's say the state is created by some operator of dimension delta, then I know that my TVV bulk, as I go through, as I go in the bulk, goes like z to the 2 delta. That's going to be expansion. Then I can put in z to the 2 delta here, and the near boundary behavior of this function is enough to determine whether there's a delta function piece here or not. So you can easily show that if this delta is bigger than d minus 2 over 2, there cannot be a delta function in this second functional derivative. And d minus 2 over 2 is actually a lower bound on how dimensions are on dimensions in conformal field theories. That's a unitarity bound. And it's only saturated by free fields. And actually, if you plug delta equal d minus 2 over 2, you do get a delta function. This does have a delta function, which sort of hints at the fact that if you somehow, well, because it's ADS CFT, we know that in this regime we don't have free theories on the boundary. But if you somehow did have a free theory, that you would get another contribution to the delta function, which is sort of reminiscent to the fact that in free theories you don't expect the saturation of QNEC to hold. So that so this other term, that's the delta function of relative entropy, is sort of analogous to that additional term that I was mentioning appears in that paper. Okay, so that sort of, for these kind of states, it establishes that S double prime equals 2 pi TVV of the CFD. Now, there are some arguments, I'm not going to go through them here, but if you include S bulk corrections, and so at this order, we could treat the bulk fields to be kind of free. So we can schematically know how the S bulk function behaves under shape deformations. And for similar reasons as here, you won't have a delta function, even if you include 1 over n corrections to this. So that's the easy argument in the holographic context for seeing this. So if there's any questions here, it's important. Yeah.
So S bulk is generally quite non-local.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you Well, you so S bulk is a very non-local quantity, but all you need to know about it here is the falloff conditions with Z. And you can use null quantization techniques, which sort of basically separates the bulk killing horizon to like null lines. And then you can sort of decompose your states on each of these null lines and then just argue about how the falloff conditions would go very close to the boundary. So that's all you need. Well, deep into the bulk, this function will be very complicated. But because you're only interested in how the falloff condition with Z, you can make some progress there. So that's the intuition.
Assume that S bulk is some integral or functions of Z?
Integral of functions of Z?
Yeah, because here Z appears only because you have an integral. S bulk is just a number.
Well, so it's the second shape deformation of a Neumann entropy basically the point is that because you have null quantization techniques, you have to sum over these, there's a sum in Z because you have to sort of sum over these pencils to get that quantity, and that's where the Z dependence is. You expect it to have another dz integral and a bunch of Z dependent integrants, and then you could imagine having like a double integral as well, but that makes the delta function even, that makes it even weaker to give a delta function. So that's sort of roughly how it goes.
And this argument works at a level
of three quantum fields. Well, you can better speculate because we have this null quantization technique because the bulk is free. Yeah, but
can you imagine adding interactions?
That's if you add interactions, it sort of becomes a little bit, becomes a little hard to state this, because then you have to assume things in the bulk that you want to kind of derive on the boundary. Like now the bulk is also interacting and you might have this saturation or not saturation. I don't know. I don't want to speculate about what happens if you include interactions in the bulk. Okay, so this is, so I'm going to quickly tell you how we convinced ourselves that if you consider non-perturbative geometries in the bulk, that this would still go through. I'm going to be very sketchy about this. So the way you prove this for a non-perturbative geometry is that you make the problem perturbative by putting a Z star slice in the bulk away from Z equals zero. Now this Z star is close enough to the boundary that's basically between Z and Z star, I can imagine that my bulk is perturbative. And obviously all the complicated non-perturbative stuff will go, basically be a non-trivial boundary condition at Z star. That you argue that this arbitrary boundary condition doesn't matter is that you look at the propagators involved in this problem, because you have to now solve a perturbative problem in between Z and Z star, and you have your own propagators and bulk to boundary propagators from both boundaries. And you just show that it's an argument involving a momentum space. You transfer the problem from position space Y to momentum space K, and in K space, the delta function is basically is a function which at very large values of K doesn't decay to zero, it stays a constant. So there you argue that this boundary propagators have an exponential suppression in K in them, that when the exponential suppression hits any smooth profile on the boundary condition on this red plane, it will make it die fast enough that cannot give you a delta function. So there basically, this exponential suppression in the propagator fixes the fact that you don't know anything about the boundary condition in non-perturbative geometry. After this, you know that the boundary condition cannot be responsible for a delta function. Now you do perturbation theory between Z equals zero and Z equals Z star, and argue that only the first order terms in that perturbation could possibly give you a delta function. Now you've reduced the problem to a first order calculation, which I've already done. So that's how you solve this. That's how you generalize this to non-perturbative geometries. Okay. So I'm going to go through some consequences of a stub point closure.
Just to understand.
Yeah.
That all sounds great. It's just how you think you work. Mm-hmm. You said something about how you convinced yourselves. Does that mean that this is, at this point, a proof in a non-perturbative context? Or does it mean that it's probably a proof, but there are still I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed?
I think it's a physics proof. Yeah, as in, it's... Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They're pretty controlled. Geometry, yeah.
Geometry,
yes.
It doesn't have anything to do with non-perturbative in 1 over n.
No, no, no. Non-perturbative in geometry. Oh, did I not? Oh, yeah. I should have probably put non-perturbative in geometry, yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you had some more general argument for why this could be true in general form.
Yes, I'm going to... That's two slides at the end. I'm going to sketch the proof that we are working on, basically, of this in general conformal field, interacting conformal field theories. By the way, these arguments are also not affected by relevant deformations. As you expect them to usually. And another thing I wanted to mention was, something I should mention about the perturbative proof is that the perturbative proof is not, the states that are perturbative in geometry obviously don't have to be perturbative in the boundary Hilbert space sense. In other words, they're not perturbatively close to the vacuum. So it's pretty non-trivial that the saturation works for even perturbative geometries because they really could be orthogonal to the vacuum state, you know? So. Because actually, the saturation of the Hunnic for perturbatively close to vacuum states in the boundary would be is trivial. It's basically relative entropy. Yeah, basically, the S double prime becomes basically vacuum modular Hamiltonian double prime, and you have the delta function. Is it?
You raised the question of relevant deformations. Let me just ask a technical question.
Mm-hmm. The null-null, the null-null saturation, I don't think so.
I mean, there are various cases involving low-dimensional operators where there could be additional subtleties.
Yeah, there could be additional divergences which will cancel in both,
in the
null-null case.
Yeah, okay. But you're certainly doing cancel.
Yes. Yeah, we looked into those, yeah. Was expected actually from your work on this, yeah. Okay, let's see. I don't know what comes in. Oh, okay. So let's look at some of the consequences. Let's go back to this chain rule thing. So this partial lambda derivative of this quantity could be written as the coefficient of the delta function piece plus this integral of the off diagonals. Now, plug in our result as double prime equals 2 pi TVV. By the way, now imagine that I'm applying this in a general CFD. Use S double prime equals 2 pi TVV. Then you get this. Then you integrate both sides in lambda. When you do that, this thing is an independent argument. You can show that it's kind of intuitive, but you can also prove it, that this, when you integrate in lambda, it drops out of the expression. So then what you get is the average null energy condition. Average null energy operator, the expectation value of the average null energy operator, basically TVV integrated along the null line, equals minus this, you know, kind of a messy expression involving a d lambda derivative and the transverse derivative of the off-diagonal second derivatives of phenomenal entropy. Now, this quantity I've already stated that it has a sign of its own because of a strong subadditivity, and there's an additional minus here which makes its sign non-negative. So this is, you could think of it as another proof of the average null energy condition, which if you assume saturation, you can, it follows from just a simple manipulation. Okay, now last consequence is now bring gravity back. And when you bring gravity back, it's going to be a little confusing at how to make these statements more well defined. But let's say you have, so let's write down generalized entropy again, and let's just take two functional derivatives of this generalized entropy and look for a delta function piece. Let's just speculate a little bit. Now, when you do that, the area double prime over four, so something I should mention is that I did all these things for flat cuts, cuts of the null plane. So when I have gravity and when I have curved geometry, I can just get close to a flat cut by going to a entangling surface, which locally has expansion and shear equals zero, and maybe further derivatives of expansion shear in the transverse direction equals zero. So make them as flat as possible locally. Then area double prime of that entangling surface is just going to be equal to a null component of Ricci tensor over 4g to the minus. This is going to be the gravitational part of the entropy double prime. And if I plug in the fact that the matter entropy double prime is just 2 pi TVV, and I get something that is very tempting to say, set it equal to zero and get the null component of Einstein field equations. So I don't have a reason, that's why there's a question mark here, I don't have a reason to say that this has to be zero. But if you had thermodynamic interpretation of this quantity and said S gen double prime always has to be zero, in other words, S gen double prime does not have a delta function in these functional derivatives, then that would give you Einstein field equations, the null components of Einstein field equations. Maybe you could say that generalized entropy is kind of a nicer quantity, so it doesn't have singular functions like delta functions in it or something. I don't know why. I don't know how to motivate it further, but that it's just an observation. But,
sorry, so why is the second derivative of the generalized entropy exactly R this R V term? Isn't there a contribution from the matter part as well?
I'm using my sizers.
You're using your sizers.
Yeah.
I mean,
the all previous slides were the explanation. Right. It sort of just begs for why this would have to be equal to zero. Like, what's the explanation for the world? I don't know what I did. Okay. Yeah, okay, so thermodynamic interpretation for that, I don't know what it would be. Okay, so let me just add two slides, just these are the last two slides, explaining how we are proving this for general CFTs, just a sketch of it. So we're going to basically compute the entanglement entropy for using the replica trick. So we start by writing out the Reni entropy for some state psi, which is just this quantity. Then take the n goes to 1 limit. It's probably familiar to most of you guys how this replica trick thing works. The technique we're using is basically techniques of defect CFTs, which basically, if you imagine, to take this n goes to 1 limit, you need to analytically continue in n and take n to be any real number. So you can think of this n-sheeted CFT theory with an entangling surface in the middle as a CFT with a defect in it, where the defect is labeled by n. So when I put in this sigma n psi, I just mean some state psi in this defect CFT where the defect is labeled by n. And in that language, so now I have a theory, I have a defect theory where it has some local operators on the defect and has some local operators away from the defect. So some local so there is always a local operator on the defect, which is called the displacement operator. This operator always, for any value of n, has the same dimension d minus 1. And if I want to calculate shape deformations, the way I do it is that I put in this psi sigma n thing, which just notes that I'm in a state psi in this defect theory, and I put these defect operators at positions y and y prime. And then I compute this, and then I get this is the shape deformation of the Reni entropies. Now, the n goes to 1 limit of this would be the shape deformation of the phenomenon entropy. So now, these two d operators that are appearing here, the dv operators, it's tempting to do an OPE on these to displacement operators. Displacement because they are moving the defect. So there is one term in my OP among many other terms that looks like this. There is a particular operator T hat, which is an operator in the defect theory where in the n goes to one limit becomes the stress tensor of the n equals one theory, the usual stress tensor. And this OPE will have this structure constant C, which is n dependent, and this Gn, which is related to the dimension of this TVV operator at some value of n. And the observation is that the operator T hat, which goes to TVV in the n goes to one limit, you can calculate the Cn and Gn for it. And basically, all you need to observe is that Cn goes like n minus 1 squared, and Gn is like d plus something that goes like n minus 1. So these two observations are enough, because if you look at this expression and take the n goes to one limit of this, putting these two together, this turns into a delta function. So there is this. So there's this stress tensor operator in the n-sheeted theory, which I'm labeling T hat, that becomes the TVV times the delta function in the n goes to one limit. So that's how the general proof goes. And actually, the main struggle actually in the general proof is to show. So there are other operators, but they won't be delta functions. Other operators here. The main struggle in this proof is to actually reproduce the free field non-saturation. So that's what we have been working on for a few months now. And I think it works finally. Yeah.
That's just the free field non-saturation comes from some terms, vanishing or something, some special condition that has
separate. Yeah, it comes from a new operator that doesn't have the right dimensions in the interacting case to become a delta function, but in the free case, it has the right dimension. So there's another term. You have to add to this list.
And just to check, if I understand correctly, all the arguments are for d greater than 2?
Oh, yes. So thank you for that. Because there is no transverse direction to separate the delta function, yes. So
if d equals 2, we don't expect saturation.
No. We know that it's not saturated. Coherent states in the bulk. S double prime would be, I think. Yeah. An easy ADS3 calculation would show you. Yeah. So, okay, work in progress is basically this general CFD proof with Tom Faulkner, two students, Alan Levin and Wen, and a student of Faulkner, Srivatsan. And I think the consequences of S double prime are actually the two things that would be interesting to explore, because it clearly, the off-diagonal parts of this shape deformations clearly know about the energy. They integrate to the average non-energy condition, the average non-energy, for example. So it would be interesting to know more about the relation between off-diagonals and energy. And also this connection when you bring gravity back, I think it's something that deserves more investigation. Okay, thank you.
So I just want to make sure I understand. The holographic proof applies for conformal field theories, but your general proof at the end didn't use conformal invariance? Or?
Well, these are all language. This is all language of defect CFTs, and I'm using defect CFTs. Yeah. So, yeah.
The holographic argument is also a really important field theory because it allows wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say. And the hint that the hint that the holographic argument is more generally true is just it's the fact that it's not affected by doesn't seem to be affected by 1/n corrections and higher derivative correction. That's what led us to think that this is more generally true. Yeah, before that we were thinking it might be holographic fact only, the holographic CFD fact, and maybe only true for these particular states.
Okay. Can you just reiterate what you said a minute ago about the off-diagonal parts?
Yeah, I mean, just as I was showing here, like you can basically integrate the off-diagonal things, the off-diagonal terms. They integrate in this convoluted transverse and null integral way to the average known energy in any state. So, and this expression just involves the off-diagonal parts of this variation. And so that's what I'm saying, that the off-diagonals clearly know about the energy, but maybe not in as local of a way that the S double prime knows about the energy. Yeah. I just replaced the S double prime by 2 pi TVV. By the way, I should, yeah. So that's the connection with the off diagonals. I think it would be interesting to know, like, what parts of the off diagonals know about the energy. Because the off diagonals, you can separate the off diagonal terms by how they depend on y minus y prime. They could depend on y minus y prime with various powers. Some of them are more off-diagonal than others. Maybe you could sort of isolate one of those off-diagonals that always is responsible for recovering the energy in this integral, and the rest sort of integrate to zero or something. So isolating the role of energy in this off-diagonal term was the thing that I wanted to say might be interesting to explore further. I should also say that this, regarding this saturation, that you can do this S double prime equals 2 pi TVV in various null directions and basically get all the components of a stress tensor except for the trace. So it sort of gives you a lot of the, and in a CFT the trace would be zero, but in general you have access to a lot of the components of a stress tensor just with use, just by looking at shape deformation of phenomenal entropy. Thank you.